This podcast is supported by Washington.org. Washington, D.C. offers visitors so much to explore. Just ask Dayo, who shared her experiences from a recent visit.
What was your favorite food all weekend?
The Ethiopian food at Sihei.
And the first place you would visit again?
The bookstore, Little District Books.
What did you appreciate the most?
Really just like the genuine kindness of everyone that I encountered this weekend.
Why should people visit D.C.?
Well, D.C. is a place with such a thriving culture.
Washington, D.C. has something for everybody. Plan your next trip at Washington.org.
Welcome to the New York Times podcast, your I Quit Work, That's What I Did of weekly, whatever the hell this is, music, news, and criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica. Oh, it's Grammys night. We're in the afterglow of the 2024 Grammys. I've barely slept. We're here. I see Karen. The hair is wet, which means there's been an attempt at renewal to rinse the show and its after effects off of her. I've not yet been so blessed, but hopefully after this, we will get to that. Karen Gans is here. Hello.
Hello, John. It's been regrettably days since I hadn't showered since I started prepping Grammy posts. I will let the listeners guess how long that's been.
Karen was also awake with me at 4:15 last night as I filed the notebook and we put that out into the world. So salute to Karen Gans for being awake now, and salute to myself, frankly, for being awake now. Lindsay Zolads is here.
Lindsay, also awake.
I think of you as a bridger between communities. How do you feel about that?
I've been told that. I hear that a lot. So I'm not surprised to hear you say that, John.
We're very happy that you're here to join us to bridge this conversation. John Perales, Chief Pop Music Critic of the New York Times, is here.
I am indeed.
JP, I want to start with you. And the reason I want to start with you is because I feel like maybe out of all of us, you are historically the most sympathetic to the Grammys.
Wait,
and I don't
what?
Like, and what? I feel like you are sometimes. I feel like I'm here like rinsing them. And then I feel like it's real silver lining stuff. I feel like you will always find something and be like, no, this is good. I respect this. I'm grateful that they did this. And I want to say this year, I am playing the role of John Perales. I thought the Grammys were pretty good.
I think we all thought they were pretty good, John.
Yeah, we did.
And pretty fun. I did write a notebook about some troubling undercurrents because that's what you do at 2 in the morning after the show. But broadly speaking, did the Grammys get it correct? And I mean that not just in the awards, but in the presentation, in the structure, in the production of the telecast. JP, what do you think about this year's show, especially vis-a-vis recent shows?
Yeah, I thought it zoomed by. I thought it was well lighted and well staged, mostly except for poor SZA. But it seemed to go by a lot faster than most of them. There was no giant lacuna in the middle. I was unsympathetic to the, what they call them, year of my life intros for the big stars. But other than that, I thought it was really well done. I thought Trevor Noah was totally caffeinated.
He actually got a couple of jokes off. I mean, there were a couple of bad ones, but like I found him better than usual.
Yeah. I mean, look, that's a job that requires relentless positivity and also the presumption that Dua Lipa is a good performer. It's a challenge to keep a straight face. You know, he's a little bit dead inside, I thought, as he was radiating optimism throughout the night. But broadly speaking, the thing that I thought most about Trevor Noah is he didn't weigh the thing down. I think he touched lightly, which was like about the right choice to do. Okay, let's start with Taylor. And look, Taylor won Album of the Year for the fourth time for Midnights. I don't think this is a top four Taylor album, but you know, here we are. So Midnights won Album of the Year, but I want to start with something that's maybe more people are perhaps talking about, which is how do you accept an award from Celine Dion, who is coming back from extreme health problems, and essentially yank it from her hand and not look her in the eye? How do you do that? And Taylor, look, Taylor is ordinarily a mensch, thanking everybody, embracing everybody, hugging, taking pictures. It was just a very, very strange disconnect, I thought, in that moment. How did y'all feel when you saw her high-fiving Antonoff, yanking Lana up on stage, and then blanking Celine? How'd that feel for y'all?
I felt like she had that moment choreographed in her mind. No one was expecting Celine to be there, least of all any of us. I was more uncomfortable by her dragging Lana up there, frankly, because Lana just lost that award, and Lana just lost every Grammy she has ever been nominated for. She was shut out again tonight. Or what day is it? Is it Sunday, Monday? I don't know. I felt for Lana in that moment, and I know that what Taylor said about her was very sweet, but I think she was like going through it in that moment.
You mean Lana did not wish to be an ornament on the Taylor tree in that specific moment?
Yeah,
is that what you're saying?
She was up for her own album, which lost. And yes, she does have a brief cameo on Midnight. Like, I guess she deserved to be up there as like a collaborator, but I kind of felt like just let her wallow a little bit. It felt, you know, I think that it was a moment, it was a night of Taylor sort of inserting herself into other people's moments to varying degrees, which we can get to.
Here's a hot take. Taylor is to Lana as Jay-Z is to Beyonce, which is to say getting on stage and telling the Grammys, hey, you've got it wrong.
Yeah, much to the visible discomfort of the person they're talking about. Yes, you're right.
So, JP, what do you make of the Taylor win? I think, at least for me, whether or not it's the best Taylor album, I don't actually think that that's the best album in this category. But it just seems like if Taylor puts out an album, we're in the phase where she's just going to win a bunch. What do you make of Midnights, especially in relationship to the SZA record, Olivia record, so on and so forth?
Midnights wasn't in my top 10 or whatever, 35, but and SZA was number one. So I would have liked to have SZA win. However, as I have documented many times, Grammys run on inertia. Once you get one, you get a bunch. And I think the Grammys wanted to be a coronation for Taylor Swift. You know, what's to lose? Swifties will all join the triumphant moment. Taylor Swift is not a bad musician. Taylor Swift is good enough. And so, you know, why not give it to her? Because they knew it was going to be a historic moment, and they knew.
You mean they knew that she would use the show to announce a new album and absolutely overshine every single person who won an award or performed? They knew that? They were good with that? I mean, they probably, if they did know that, they probably would have been good with that.
Album of the Year is usually really reactionary. It's usually like, you know, the Tony Bennett Award, the, you know, late Steely Dan Award, the Beck Award. So in a way, it's signaling that Taylor has joined the elders.
Big facts. Where's that piece? I need that piece.
They want to cruise on Taylor's celebrity, though. They're very happy to have joyous Swifties around the world saying, oh, the Grammys got it right.
You know who's relieved that she announced the new album last night? Usher. Because she, I bet if she she would have. She was gonna win a Grammy televised last night. But I was wondering, like, what would have happened if she hadn't? And then she's hijacking the Super Bowl, which, you know, is probably going to happen anyway in its own form. But I do wonder what would have happened if...
I mean, I have to say, I was actually shocked by the news that she has another album. I thought she was going to announce the Reputation Taylor's version. For somebody who is in the center of so many media maelstroms at the moment, I really did think, I guess erroneously, that she would take this moment to pause and like take herself out of the narrative for like, I don't know, 6 months. But she can't stop.
That is the Reputation. Like, that's the modality of the Reputation era, which is like, lean into the drama, lean into the tension, lean into the swirl of energy.
She's method acting her way into the Reputation re-release era?
Maybe.
I saw a tweet that was like, Taylor's that girl at work that never takes her PTO. And I was like, yeah.
Wow.
It can't be
relatable.
Me.
Relatable,
yeah,
TBH.
Yeah, we're all feeling that at the moment.
Obviously, whether or not we think Midnights is the best album of the batch, nominated for Album of the Year, the assigning of that award to Taylor makes some sense, I think, in Grammy lore, Grammy matrix. The thing that I was maybe even more surprised with, even though I kind of predicted it, was the Miley stuff. Miley is a person who, frankly, I think since Banger's era has been fairly ambivalent about, like, do I want to be a famous pop star or not a famous pop star? And the casualness of Flowers, and, you know, people talk about, oh, Luke Combs just covered a song by a black artist and like got all this acclaim. Like, yeah, you know, I could take or leave that particular argument. Miley just rewrote a song, made, you know, essentially remade a song by a non-white artist, and people didn't really talk about that. But anyway, it's still very good, and I like Flowers a lot, and I'm sort of happy it won, but Miley as a ambivalent pop star, I think, was really on display last night. She didn't feel particularly tethered to, like, what was happening on the rest of the show. She just sort of said, I'm going to do a 1970s review. I'm going to do my hair this way. I'm going to wear these outfits. I'm going to kind of present in a very classic way that's disconnected from the contemporary Grammys, and then gave speeches that was kind of like, I'm doing great. Thanks. I guess I'm here. Okay. Love y'all. Later. This doesn't have anything to do with me. Or y'all don't have anything to do with me. I wonder what you make of Miley last night.
I thought she was fun. Fun is a good thing.
Yeah. Underappreciated.
Yeah. I mean, I was thinking of something you said on a previous podcast, our year-end podcast, when you had Used to Be Young as one of your Song of the Year extras. And I think you said, like, if she releases a song and she's like 60, this is her big Grammy moment or something. And it's interesting that that wasn't the song, like, that's on that record, but it was Flowers that kind of gave her that moment, which, you know, isn't a song that's saying as much. It's sleek and it's fun, and it's, she does a good job singing it vocally. Like, I'm not mad that it won. I don't think it was the strongest song in either of the categories that it won, but I think Miley is someone who deserves some Grammys by now. And I thought she brought a really zesty energy to that was really, in a way, it felt like kind of the opposite of Taylor, that felt sort of choreographed in this way of just like, I know I'm going to be on stage, so I'm going to make this announcement. I don't really think Miley was expecting to be up there, and she kind of made the most of that spontaneity in a way that only she can. So I was here for it.
I love Miley. I love Miley so much. I really do. I'm not a fan of Flowers, but I could live with it. But it was worth it for that performance. What was she doing? It was incredible. She was sashaying around. The choreography was, you know, questionable. The hair was incredible.
Hair was great. Hair was out of control.
The attitude it's impeccable. Bless Miley. You know, I know your notebook had, we could talk about your notebook a little more after. It talks a lot about the comfort of a certain kind of performer and a winner that was at the Grammys last night. But Miley's comfortable. She's one of the most comfortable people on stage and before a camera I've ever seen. You know, part of it is that child stardom.
Yeah,
you know,
she's been famous since she was 10 or 12.
I used to say this watching Hannah Montana. She has amazing comedic timing. She's just great. She's an all-around superstar. I'm completely here for it. I pray she makes an album all the way through that I love. There's like parts of Miley that I love on every album. The one right before this was the rock album with the Dua song, Prisoner. My God, that was one of my top songs of last year or the year before. What a banger, no pun intended. I'm hoping that we are setting Miley cosmically on a path to get to her greatest self. Because when I started at the Times in 2015, she was in that Dead Pets era with Flaming Lips. Oof, and I reviewed a live show on that tour, and it was like cutting. One of the meanest things I've had to write. And I love her. I was so bummed out about it. And I want Miley to enter the Miley-sance now. I want it to happen. I'm willing it to be.
But I think that Miley, since Bangers, having these like micro eras that are kind of a low to medium effectiveness, has, I think, reversed back onto her and saying, maybe don't try that hard. Like, don't overthink it. Like, again, do be the opposite of Taylor. Like, and then to get reinforced at the Grammys by being like, I have this hit. Y'all are letting me perform it. I'm doing it in a way that has nothing to do with anybody else. It's totally my own. And you guys gave me awards. I actually think that the takeaway is not going to be like, I'm going to trouble down and like work hard to make a grand statement opus album. I think it's going to be like, no, I'm good. Once every 3 to 5 years, I'll stumble onto an absolute smash and I'll get a couple Grammys now. That's how it feels.
It's a song that's not tied to any narrative about her personal life, too, in this way. It feels kind of anonymous. Like, you know, we've seen her go through all these like publicized breakups and scandals and all these things. And like, I don't know who that song is about. And I think that's part of what, like, again, of the kind of anti-Taylor thing. It's anti-Easter egg, you know, we're not like digging for a deeper meaning in Flowers. It just is what it is. It's a well-constructed, sleek pop song that lasts 3.5 minutes and then evaporates into the mist. And I think, again, like, I think she's someone who can do that and bring some flair to it. But yeah, I think she doesn't need to overthink it, doesn't need to be intentionally shocking. Just she's exciting it just in her pure uncut form. So I think she's hopefully finally kind of easing into that now. And I think that's what we saw.
It's interesting because there was like a lot of stuff last night where it's like, who's being real and who's just being award show real? And I thought that Billy and Phineas were being pretty real. You know, like it's hard to do the self-effacing acceptance speech that, you know, Adele perfected when she was like, oh my God, Beyonce, I'm so ashamed. Help. I know I'm about to get ripped for this. I think Billy and Phineas handled that well. They seem real to me. Miley seems really real to me. I'm sorry Olivia didn't get a chance to accept any awards.
They're really not doing right by Olivia. I mean, it's like they're really like making her wait in line. I was struck by that. I might have should have written something about that last night. I was pretty struck with they're making her wait like this. But it's Taylor and Billy especially just take up so much space. It's really hard. But I think you're right about Billy and Phineas. And I think briefly, just to mention The Notebook, I thought broadly speaking, the Grammys were fun. A lot of different folks got awards, like Victoria Monet got a bunch, SZA got a bunch, Taylor got some, Phoebe Bridgers, like they're spread out. It didn't feel as kind of lopsided as it has in some years, but the three big categories, despite diverse nominees, obviously all went to white artists. And so, but the thing that I kept thinking about while watching the show is, damn, Taylor looks like she's in her living room. You know, like Miley is treating this like it doesn't even, it's not even a big deal. And then Jay-Z comes on and is basically like, some of y'all don't belong in the category. And Jay-Z is the person who kind of like reorients the framing of the show to say to the audience at home, but especially the audience in the room, let's not pretend that this is 100% fair / ethical / balanced. Alludes to the fact that Beyonce has won the most Grammys of all time, but not Album of the Year, which would prove very pointed when Taylor wins Album of the Year for the fourth time later in the night. And then when you step back and you look at, again, Taylor and Miley and how they handled winning, and Victoria Monet and SZA, how they handled winning. Victoria Monet and SZA both gave speeches about how improbable their wins are. And I'm not saying that a white artist who won has never given such a speech, or that a black artist who won in the past has never given a different kind of speech. But in this particular moment where the Grammys are facing continuing scrutiny of how black music is represented, to say nothing of the fact that Killer Mike, who won 3 Grammys, was like led away in handcuffs for an altercation that we don't know the details of before the show. It just was very notable that it really felt like there were two Grammy awards happening at the same time. There was the old hands, and then there were black artists who were just kind of like, we would like to remind you that this does not come easy.
Yes. And another note on Album of the Year, you know, Taylor broke a record by winning it 4 times, but had SZA won, she would have been the first black woman to win since Lauryn Hill.
Crazy.
In the last century.
Yeah. Yeah. Not the 1800s. The 1900s. Still, the 1900s. That was a long time ago. So that was really striking to me. And again, I do want to give the Grammys credit. Broadly speaking, the last 2 to 3 years have been an improvement, I think, in the post Ken Ehrlich, post Neil Portnow, you know, look up what Phoebe Bridgers said, in the post Ehrlich Portnow era. What you see on the telecast and more or less in the nominees, I think hip hop is still in a tough place, but you're seeing things inching towards a reflection of what pop music actually is these days. But that doesn't mean that there are not weak spots. And I think those speeches for me underscored that.
Totally. Also, JP, I was wondering if you wanted to say a thing about the other categories that made it to air last night, because we had been, you know, surmising beforehand what might pop up. And you correctly predicted a couple. They did Musica Urbana, was that right?
Mm-hmm. Reggaeton, basically.
Yeah, they did Karol G.
I was pleased to see it, but they only found 3 albums in that category.
I have a theory about that, which I mentioned on Deluxe last week, but I have a soft theory, which is Bad Bunny was nominated and then withdrew himself from contention. It's one of the only things that makes any sense, because I can imagine that happening like right before the deadline or whatever, and him just pulling a Drake on some level. I don't know if it's just three, it's baffling, because obviously that's just not reflective of one of the most like fertile areas of music right now. Like, that's just a bizarre choice. So it makes me think something weird happened.
Maybe they paid him off so they could get the clean narrative of only women winning awards on the telecast.
Wow.
PSYOP.
Ben, look into it.
Yes. JP, what did you make of the choice of what was televised?
I was happy to see Musica Urbana on there. Karol G did have a number one album in Spanish. It's nice that they noticed. That category is tucked way down, really low. It's number 57, I think. And they clearly wanted Karol G's stardom. They also probably knew that she'd give a really sweet speech, which she did.
I also felt that way about the best country album, Lainey Wilson. This was sort of an unusual year for country album, I thought, but none of the kind of like big obvious stars seemed to be nominated. Lainey is a rising star, and her album to me sounds very specific, does not reflect a lot of other things that are happening in Nashville right now. She has a very unique vocal tone. I think the way that she embraces different eras of country as influence points is not consistent with how most other people who are making major label Nashville music are sound right now. So I thought it was actually quite encouraging that she won, because it lets me know there is a little bit of room, especially for Nashville, which historically does not care about women.
Were you surprised that Zach Bryan didn't win? Because I honestly was.
I do think that Zach Bryan is... how can you be both very mainstream and popular and totally obscure at the same time? I've been to a few Zach Bryan shows. He is undeniably popular. Obviously, he does incredibly well on streaming. But I don't think that he's popular in the sense that incredibly centrist mainstream music fans are that aware of him, certainly over, let's say, over 35. I do think there's that. I also think his relationship to country is tenuous at best. He has said he does not consider himself a country artist. Obviously, people who slot people into genres don't have really anywhere else to put Zach Bryan. You could put him in, like, is Americana a category, or like contemporary folk or whatever? Like, none of those are right. They have to put him in a big category. Country's the closest, but the voting block for country music is largely people in Nashville. And people in Nashville are kind of like, who's this guy? And if anything, maybe even a tiny bit resentful of how much success Zach Bryan has found by limiting the borders of country music. So I wasn't totally surprised. I think Zach Bryan's the kind of guy who at some point will probably win an album of the year or a record of the year or something like that. But it will be by going around country, not by going through country. Voting for Lainey Wilson over Zach Bryan is really voting for Nashville over someone who decided to do it a different way. I also, Lainey, that record's good. It's not like, I don't like love it personally, but it's like, it's incredibly good. It's really well made. She sounds good. Songs are well structured, et cetera, et cetera. Let's talk a tiny bit about performances. We were talking about speeches, but I think, you know, maybe I'm just like so pilled at this point that I'm just like, I'm gonna parse the speeches, because I can't parse the winners or the performances. I'm too far gone.
This is one of the first years we've had speeches to parse, if we're being honest. You know, every year they get a transcriber for the Oscars and for the Globes. And I always tell them for the Grammys, no one's going to say anything, don't worry about it. And then this year I was like, whoops, there was a lot to say. And
don't turn down resources, Karen.
No, don't worry. We had somebody on it. But, you know, the Grammys are usually not a site for interesting speeches. So anyway, it was notable. But yeah, we're just talking about who got snubbed and the performances. What were your favorite performances, everybody?
I think we should talk. Can we talk a little bit about the Billy performance to start? Here is a little sliver of What Was I Made For by Billie Eilish and Phineas.
What was I?
Over the last 25 years, the world has witnessed incredible progress, from dial-up modems to 5G connectivity, from massive PC towers to AI-enabled microchips. Innovators are rethinking possibilities every day. Through it all, Invesco's QQQ ETF has provided investors access to the world of innovation. Be a part of the next 25 years of new ideas by supporting the fund that gives you access to innovative companies. Invesco QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. There are risks when investing in ETFs, including possible loss of money. ETFs' risks are similar to those of stocks. Investments in the tech sector are subject to greater risk and more volatility than more diversified investments. Before investing, carefully read and consider fund investment objectives, risks, charges, expenses, and more in prospectus at Invesco.com. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
I use the New York Times Games app every single day.
I love playing Connections.
With Connections, I need to twist my brain to see the different categories.
I think I know this connection. Look, Bath is a city in England, Sandwich is a city in England, Reading is a city in England, and I'm going to guess Derby is a city in England.
I started Wordle 194 days ago, and I haven't missed a day.
The New York Times Games app has all the games right there.
I absolutely love Spelling Bee. I always have to get Genius.
I've seen you yell at it and say, that should be a word.
Totally should be a word.
Sudoku is kind of my version of lifting heavy weights at the gym.
At this point, I'm probably more consistent with doing the crossword than brushing my teeth.
When I can finish a hard puzzle without hints, I feel like the smartest person in the world.
When I have to look up a clue to help me, I'm learning something new.
It gives me joy every single day.
Start playing in the New York Times Games app.
You can download it at nytimes.com/gamesapp.
This is, I thought, like, this was a really impressive performance. I mean, y'all know how I feel about Billy. If they had Billy doing the Tony Bennett memoriam, it would have been so just chef's kiss. But that didn't happen. Instead, Billy did What Was I Made For? She's a pro. We're going to be living with Billie Eilish for 30 more years, 40 more years.
I mean, thank God. She's fantastic.
Yeah.
We're here for it.
I thought it was beautiful. I mean, it was poised and precise and extremely quiet and then just loud enough. I thought she's just elegant, you know, in the old-fashioned Tin Pan Alley, Grammy, previous generation way. She's got it. And she nails stuff live. You know, you can do a lot in the studio. Apparently, you don't have to with her.
That's a really good point. Yeah.
Yeah, she's really good. And in the Slack last night, as per usual, CG and I are disagreeing about who was lip syncing and who was singing live.
We got decades of this disagreement going now, John.
Yeah, this is, as I said last night, this is our number one disagreement. It's either this or M dashes versus semicolons or other punctuation. Those are the two signature debates of the John Karen relationship. One thing that we disagreed about last night was Olivia, as far as that specific thing. I think the Olivia performance was really good. I don't know if she was totally singing live. Not sure.
She was 1,000% singing live. I've seen her, and you know, I love her very
I've
much.
I've seen her too.
Miss those notes was that were the next the words that were about to come out of my mouth on multiple performances of the song, including on SNL. She always sings live. And you can tell. And she was exceptionally focused on nailing those notes last night. And she, you know, they were a teeny bit off, but they were really close. She was 100% live. Lindsay, back me.
I agree. And I think that kind of puts into perspective, too, JP, the point you made about Billy just being so consistent singing live. Like, it's hard to nail those notes in the upper register in front of Joni Mitchell and Tracy Chapman. Like, that's a nerve-wracking moment. And I think the slight, I don't want to call it faltering of Olivia, because I thought that was a beautiful performance, but I think you can see the effort there. Whereas with Billy, it just is effortless and it's so professional, but it's not bloodless in this way. You know, like I was so, you know, I'm always so impressed by her, but I was thinking there was, I think it was like one of the Oscar roundtables they did or songwriter roundtables, like some, there was like a snippet that went viral of her talking about writing the song. And she's talking about, you know, like, because I think some people have this misconception that like the high breathy thing is like the only way she can sing. And she's talking in this viral clip about it being a stylistic choice to kind of reflect the feeling of the wispy, fragile feeling of the song that she's singing up there. And she kind of shows like, I could have belted it out. Like, you know, I'm not even going to try, but she shows like she can do that. And I think something that was really effective about that performance is that there were moments when she kind of dipped into that other register in a way she doesn't in the recorded song, to just be like, I can sing like this too, and I can go here and use those flourishes. But the point of that song is that sort of tension you feel because it's all up here. And I think her just underscoring the creative choice of making that was really came through. And I think it was a performance that even like added something to the original song. She's totally going to win the Oscar for it too. And she better not be surprised when that happens, because she, you know, just.
You mean she better not say, dang, guys, this is stupid?
Yeah, just own it, Billy. You killed it. Like, just accept.
Just lean in.
Yeah, yeah.
I also want to give them props because they showed up at the pre-show. They showed up at the Grammy premiere, which stars don't do when they're getting styled, and came up and gave a speech. And Phineas said that their father worked as a construction worker at Mattel and put food on their table. So, which I thought she would repeat when she had like an audience in the millions instead of the thousands, but they didn't. But I thought that was a very sweet moment.
Yeah, we spoke to her about the song and that didn't come up. I don't know if that had come up in the press elsewhere, but I thought that was a really striking moment. I couldn't believe that they showed up. Joni Mitchell showed up at the pre-ceremony and came out. She walked out with her cane and accepted her award and gave an amazing little speech. The pre-show, actually, JP, I know you've said this, long said this, but it really is, it's the real deal. It's just, it's so many hours of watching. You started 3:30 and it ends at like 7, and then the real one's the real one. The telecast one is 8 to 11:30. Sorry.
That's okay. I mean, it is what it is.
The broadcast one. But Killer Mike was also absolutely incredible on the pre-show. He had things to say about aging in rap and how, you know, you can't count him out. And he was like, you know, if you're 78 or whatever, I want to hear you rapping about who you're hooking up with at the nursing home. Hilarious.
While accepting an award for a song that Andre is on.
Andre
too,
raps
said,
on.
Yeah, like yes. He said literally the opposite thing. So that's funny.
That is really funny.
A nudge.
I totally
that was
missed
a nudge
it.
To a friend
yeah,
of a friend.
Yeah, I
nudge.
Think so too.
But it was just great. He brought so much energy to it. A lot of people actually in the classical, there was an opera acceptance at the end. JP, we were with like gave like one of the most enthusiastic speeches I've ever seen. Tyla accepting the first African music performance. Was that what the category is called?
Yeah, African music performance.
She was amazing. And it was such a great introduction to her. You know, I knew her music, but I'd not seen her as a personality. And I was like, this is a very appealing person I want to hear more from. You know, it's funny, the VMAs used to always do those, like, you know, emerging artists, you know, we'll put you on a tiny stage outside and give you your moment for a few seconds. They just always pick the wrong artist. But I feel like the right artists are bubbling to the top at the Grammy pre-show. And it is actually worth watching.
I want to talk about Joni, who you just mentioned, and also Tracy. But before that, we're just going to play a very quick game. Say one nice thing about the Dua Lipa performance challenge.
Well, she did diss basically the song from Barbie. She like stuck in like, what, two lines from it and then was done.
That was an interesting choice. I'm gonna say great scaffolding, beautiful scaffolding.
I think the dancing's improving. I thought it looked like she put a lot of work into it and I liked it.
I do not agree with that. But what I do think is the most loose I've ever seen Dua Lipa ever in life were for the 1.5 seconds that Fantasia induced out of Dua Lipa, like essentially like physically extracted from Dua Lipa.
Well, she danced up on her. Yes.
That also means you didn't watch the Seth Meyers day drinking thing where she had to be like wheeled out.
I did. No, I'm unfamiliar with that. Is that canon?
I'll send you the link.
Is that Dua canon?
I think it is.
It
yeah.
is Dua canon? Okay, well then I don't
Karen's
want to be left
agreeing
out
with
of
me.
It.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't want to be left out of it then. Okay, I will say that just before we started recording, I saw a clip on Twitter of Blue Ivy looking crazy at Beyonce after watching Dua trying to dance with Fantasia. Like you could see Dua and Fantasia like just on the right side of the video. And then you see Blue Ivy like looking and then turning to Beyonce, and then Beyonce is wearing her cowboy hat, just kind of like tilts her head down.
That's a Renaissance painting right there.
Yeah. Like I don't want to read too much. I understand that, you know, these are not Zapruder films, you know, like they could be read in multiple ways. Like I get it, but you know, it's good narrative. It's fun narrative. And I agree. Someone should paint it. If anybody wants to paint it on commission, let me know. Maybe that would be the new Popcast merch.
I felt for Blue during the Jay-Z speech too. I'm just gonna say, like, I think she did not know he was going to go in like that.
Off
was
like
just
that?
Like, Dad, can I sit down now? She was adorable, though.
She handled it really
she
well.
She has such poise. Yeah, but she's like a real kid, too. Like, she just looked like an actual 12-year-old in that moment. And that was like weirdly refreshing and reassuring. So shout out Blue Ivy, always.
Let's talk about Joni, our resident Joni Mitchellologist, Lindsay Zoledz, avid chronicler of every step that Joni Mitchell has taken in the last 12 months. You have seen Joni perform live, so you were a little bit aware, and obviously we've seen the clips on the internet and so on and so forth, but you've seen it IRL. I wonder how you felt about what happened on the show last night, especially in relationship to what you've seen in person.
I thought it was beautiful and moving. I thought it, because it was teased and like promoted so aggressively by the Grammys, because they got Joni Mitchell in her first Grammy performance ever. You know, I think the only thing that was lacking was not Joni's fault, but the element of surprise that we felt seeing her these other times, you know, like the seeing how strong and how much stamina she had at the Gorge show that I saw last June. That was a shock that like rippled through the audience. And that was incredible. The Newport Folk Festival videos that surfaced the year before, there was like a shocking element to it too. And I think we almost like are coming to expect her to do these like incredible moments now. And she delivered. I think it was beautiful. I wrote this in my best and worst thing, I think, but like, it's incredible how much meaning she's able to draw out of that song still, all these years after it has existed, and she's performed it a million times. And every time there's like a new word or just a new inflection, a new melody that she teases out that makes it feel like she's interpreting the song in the moment. And I thought that really came across last night. It was a more elegiac performance than the one that I saw at the Gorge of that, or of, you know, there's been other videos of her performing that song more recently. It also felt more solitary than the Joni jams. That's like how they're billing the performances that I saw, and she's going to play at the Hollywood Bowl in October. So there's kind of a like communal jam fest element to it. And Brandi Carlile's there, you know, people are singing back up when she's like not hitting certain high notes and stuff. And this felt very much like this is about Joni. Like, this isn't, the musicians were there to support her. And I thought the arrangement was really lovely, but this was focused on her and her voice and what she was feeling in that moment.
It also feels like an achievement of television production, which is something we don't talk about a lot with the Grammys. And I was thinking about this a lot because of the Miley performance, because the Miley performance from a directorial perspective was very self-consciously old Grammys or old music performance. It was a choice. It was shoot me in this way, shoot me flat from a distance, focus on me, keep me in the set, you know, like let the body movement do the work. Don't let the camera do the work. It was a very specific choice. But with the Joni performance, which if that same performance had happened 5 years ago, with all love to Joni Mitchell, it would have been the most boring televisual experience ever, because they would have just had a flat camera angle and just shot it real clean as if it was like an orchestra, you know, and it would not have had visual narrative drama built in. But the Grammys are making television now. They used to just have a telecast. Now they're making television. And I thought that the way it was shot felt very thoughtfully dramatic.
I loved her spinning around in the voice chair.
Like the voice.
Yeah, it was very great. It was giving voice.
Come to Team Joni.
Yeah, but it was, yeah, I thought even, because we should talk about that too, the way the show was directed and staged worked really well, both on TV and it seemed in the room too, because we, you know, open on this like tight shot of her singing. And I didn't realize at first her back was to the audience for the first verse. And then, you know, we kind of see her spin around in the throne, and then the audience is like seeing her face for the first time and applauding. And I thought that was a really beautiful moment. And they pulled off something similar with the Tracy performance, which we'll talk about too, but I loved it.
JP, what did you make of Joni? And especially, look, the Grammys are for sort of forever in like a course correction of like, oh, sorry, we screwed that up. And this feels like, you know, side by side with how certain Black artists are handled, this feels like up there with kind of wild you didn't get this right at the time. What did you make of the kind of make good, as it were?
Well, I don't know that there's that much with her. I mean, I'm assuming that she must have been approached to perform at some point in her illustrious career. And she did win a Grammy really early. So it's not like they've neglected her. She is a wonderfully stubborn, idiosyncratic, self-directing person. And, you know, the music business has always been kind of slow to understand how great she is. But also, I mean, she's made this physical comeback from her aneurysm. And there is tension in the Grammys because it is live. So they were smart to put her on. She was indomitable enough to go do it perfectly. I mean, I'm convinced that, you know, had she started faltering, Brandi Carlile would have sung the high notes, but she didn't. And she wouldn't. It was just thrilling to see. But she's so thoughtful. You could see her learning and thinking every note as she sang it, thinking about those words that she wrote so long ago and, you know, looked at life. She's looked at a lot more life since she wrote it.
Comparing that performance to the Newport Folk Festival videos of like a year and a half ago. And this was what struck me at the Gorge too. Like, she's been working on her voice. Like, she has been, she's putting in work to sound like that again. I think the improvement in her tone and in the control that she had, the parts of her range that she can reach now that she couldn't in those Newport videos, it's like, you know, it's life affirming. It's like, it's beyond musical. It's like a human achievement. And I think that's why it's so moving to watch her in these ways. It's a rare, that doesn't feel like overstating it. Like, it's just, it's lovely.
Editor's comment. Honestly, Joni's return has been such a rich point of conversation for you guys. You two in particular are amazing Joniologists. There, you've had more to say about her in this conversation and in pieces you guys have written about her in the past few years than I can say about a lot of our most popular artists. It's so awesome. What a gift, you know, that she's still so rich and interesting and evolving. And I agree on the human story part, which, I mean, if you want to talk about Tracy Chapman.
Yeah, well, I think though that's where we're going.
I have never had more responses. I've seen more things on Instagram and Twitter of people just being like crying. Everybody tweeted crying, including me.
Let's take a minute and listen to Tracy Chapman and Luke Combs' Fast Car.
I remember when we were driving in your car. Speed so fast, it felt like I was wrong. City lights lay out before. Your arm felt nice wrapped around my shoulder. And I had a feeling that I belonged.
The less your business spends, the more margin you keep. But today, everything costs more. So smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one proven platform, helping you reduce IT costs, maintenance costs, and manual errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move to NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/NYT. netsuite.com/NYT.
We all cried a little bit, which I'm, you know, that's the trifecta or the quadruple. I don't know what the gambling term is, but that's all, you know, that's a big one.
Yeah. But also regarding the TV of it, I watched it again this morning more carefully, and it was framed so particularly with the reveal of her and her face and the way it lingered on her. They didn't go to the crowd for so long, and you're anticipating cut to the crowd. Everyone's going to be crazy. Everyone's going to be crying, but they didn't do it. And the first person you see after her face is Luke's face, and he is just grinning and awestruck and like happy to be there and proud. I thought they handled it perfectly. I thought Tracy was absolutely immaculate. It was so incredible to see her. What a highlight. And it came early in the show. I really think it injected this energy and it buoyed the show. I mean, it really just, it started on a high and it stayed there.
maybe not Dua Lipa, but with that, yeah.
Just in general, really good run of show, like just in terms of order. And JP, to your point, like no real like lull in the middle, even the In Memoriam segment. I mean, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I thought John Batiste was really good in the In Memoriam segment. Like look, anything is possible in 2024.
We'll talk about the Sphere later then, I guess. But
no, that is no, absolutely not that. But to your point about Tracy, again, visual drama. This is a TV show, not a telecast of a live performance. This is a television show, really drawing the anticipation out. Also, Lindsay, you sort of underscored this thing about Joni, that over the last 18 months, you're seeing her voice grow, which is something that if we've been paying attention to internet videos, like you'd be aware of. But you have no comps for Tracy Chapman. Like Tracy Chapman has not performed publicly in 15 years or so, or at least not to my
She was on a late night show a couple of years ago before the last election, but one song.
We haven't heard her sing Fast Car is, I think, more the thing. She's performed other songs in the last decade, like twice.
She's not in the mix, which is fine. You know, again, bless, like all good. So to come back, to open the duet, to be not only crisp and powerful and restrained, but also dead perfect to the thing you remember from the recording. That to me, because if she had come out and been like, I'm doing a Cajun version of, I'm doing a Zydeco version of Fast Car, like, I would have taken whatever. It would have been fine. I'm happy to have Tracy Chapman back. But to be so dead on and to just look like, yeah, I just picked this guitar up like yesterday. I'm good. Like, I could do this anytime. Like, I'm easy.
One other television note, you said having her open the song. In any other Grammy show, don't you envision them filming it as Luke does the first verse and then she comes striding out and everybody applauds? Like, yes. I thought having her start it gave her so much authorship and ownership. Obviously, it's her song, but you know, I'm sure there are people that didn't know that. You know, I'm sure there's a part of this generation that thinks it's a Luke Combs song. So in a way, it was a corrective.
Can't believe she's covering a Luke Combs song. That's crazy. What a wild choice to make a comeback on. That's unbelievable.
I'm sure that's on X, formerly known as Twitter. Yes. Well,
the other thing about that shoot was the first close-up is of the guitar. You don't know who's playing it. And then you see her hand, and then you see her face. But it was really great TV.
I'm not that excited about Luke Combs's version, but now I'm excited about how excited Luke Combs is. You know, like it doesn't change my perception of his original recording, but it does create a sort of after the fact emotional narrative that I can retroactively attach to that recording, even though I will still preferably listen to the original version.
I thought he couldn't have handled the moment better, honestly. And you have to give him credit for that, because I think that, you know, there's a lot of like, there's some haters out there who were just like, oh, it's going to ruin it if he's singing it with Tracy Chapman, like just let her sing the song. And I think that performance was about the interplay between, you know, he's sort of performing the reverence that so many people have for her and have had in her absence from the spotlight. And, you know, he was like shaking at one point. And I love he was like mouthing the words and she was singing. It was so cute. It was like a genuine moment of respect. And I think that really came through. So I actually think it was having him there, like they found a way to make that work, too. And that was also genuinely surprising. And their voices sounded great together on the chorus. Like they really, their tones complemented each other well. So it was just
he really
sublime.
Had to bring it down. Like he, yeah, like, you know, yeah. I mean, this is like the thing that I will say that's interesting about the original Luke Combs version is to me, the best Luke Combs songs by far are the rowdiest, the kind of broadest, the most bellowing. He's like really the best bellower in country music for the last 10 years. And I always thought he's a guy who manages to both have pretty precise technique as a singer with this kind of big, like he's like a precision guy hiding underneath a bar singer, but he can do both. But the original recording is one of his most, he has a few like very temperate songs that have become hits, but none of them I thought were as good as Fast Car is as a temperate song. And for him to even bring it back further to let Tracy just take the wheel, no pun intended, that it's just very impressive. It just lets me know how flexible Luke Combs actually is. I also just want to briefly say, if you've never seen the duet performance of Back at One with Brian McKnight and Mark Wills on like whatever award show that was like 25 years ago, if you're looking for a country, non-country duet, go check that out. Anyway, just throwing that out there.
Back in the Ken Ehrlich era of the Grammys, they would pair the legend with the supposed disciple, and the disciple didn't know anything about the legend that they were singing with, and the legend would be
a
really
Grammy
creaky.
Moment.
Grammy moments.
On this show, the legends killed it. You know, Stevie Wonder killed it. Annie Lennox killed it.
Oh, wow.
Billy Joel with creaky start, big finish. And, you know, see Tracy Chapman just being utter perfection, to see Joni Mitchell being mature perfection. It wasn't like, okay, you know, we're reeling you out for the last time, at like the old Grammys. I mean, these people really brought their best to it.
Can someone briefly explain to me what was going on with the Stevie Tony thing?
Yeah, Tony Bennett recorded for Once in Your Life, 1967. Stevie Wonder heard it and tore into it, and they later recorded it together as a duet. They played it at the Apollo. But what was cool was Stevie Wonder was essentially being Tony Bennett's trio. Tony Bennett's jazz trio, with that very sparse harmonization, you know, with the tempo. It was like Stevie Wonder singing with the Ralph Sharon trio for a while. And to think how well they synced that live performance where Tony Bennett name checks Stevie to the stage, that was like a technical feat that just like Stevie Wonder, you know, seemed to be able to do in his sleep.
I thought it was AI for a minute. I didn't realize that. My bad.
Wow, really assuming the worst, John.
If anybody would do that, the Grammys would do that. If anybody.
That would have been the sphere. That would have been in the sphere if it was AI.
No, I thought In Memoriam was really moving too, JP. Annie Lennox, you know, that's not an easy song to sing. And with Wendy and Lisa, that was pretty cool. Unexpected. John Batiste also. Lovable moment for John Batiste.
A really good moment for John Batiste. Very happy.
And shout out to Ann Nesby from Sounds of Blackness, who belted with him.
Is that it? Are we done? Were you done with the Grammys? Wait, I do want to say one thing about SZA before we go. We didn't really talk about SZA's performance. I felt like there were some sound issues early on in the show, at least on my television. And I thought SZA, who I think would benefit from very clear vocals, it felt like it was just very muddy. And also the theatricality of the performance, that was maybe something where there was a little bit too much happening. I mean, I think I put this in the chat last night, but like, one of the things I hate about the Grammys is they take very dynamic performers and basically be like, sit at a piano where you can't come on the show. Do your most stripped down version. And obviously it doesn't serve everybody, but I do think for at least part of that performance, some version of that might have helped amplify what SZA is really capable of. Also, SZA's speech, you know, as we mentioned earlier, was really affecting, I thought, and a real reminder that none of this is a given. It's none of it, you know, don't take it for granted. None of it's a given. Maybe it doesn't matter in the big picture, but none of it's a given. And I thought rising to that moment, not as a damn it, I'm here, but as a I still have something to achieve. And I feel like this was not necessarily something that was going to be given to me. That felt really powerful. Any last moments that you guys want to point to before we're out?
Well, people should tune in to Gabby Moreno performance from the pre-show. It's also extremely exquisite.
Do we think that the winner of next year's album of the year was announced?
I do think that. I also want to say, and I mentioned this when I wrote about the Andre first song on the Andre album, we know what the winner of the best new age album for next year's Grammy is. It will be New Blue Song. So we can hopefully replay this part this time next year, assuming we're all still standing. Okay, that's our show. Those were the Grammys. We appreciate your indulgence. I want to thank everybody for showing up on Little Sleep, Karen, Lindsay, JP, also myself. Every podcast ever is at nytimes.com/podcast. YouTube.com/podcast is where Podcast Deluxe lives. There was an episode last week with some predictions. I have not yet checked to see if Joe or I did better on the ballot. I'll get around to that after a nap, perhaps. tinyurl.com/podcast Discord or podcast Facebook. That's where you can go to chat with everybody about the show. It's the podcast.myshopify.com is where the stickers and the last couple t-shirts and maybe soon mugs. Who knows? Could happen. All that stuff is there. Subscribe to podcast anywhere you get your audio content, Spotify, Apple, YouTube, et cetera, et cetera. We will be back next week. This is Snooze by SZA.
Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.